my Wu-Tang style.
Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. TD joins us now, Teron Davenport. TD, always appreciate starting our weeks off with you. Always appreciate hearing your insight. Now, TD, I read your article on ESPN.com on Malik Willis, on the development, and how he said, you know, of course, you do something for a year, you're going to feel more confident in year two than you do in year one. From your experience in watching Malik Willis in OTAs and a mandatory minicamp, just how much more improved does Malik Willis look now than last season?
Yeah, I think he's a lot different as a player, and you could tell just how he's in and out of the huddle. It's very smooth. He's coming up to the line of scrimmage, and you can see him getting the defense and can it and check to a different play and those type of things. He's throwing with more anticipation, which is definitely something that, you know, that's how I started that article. You know, that throw that he had to Mason Kinsey in the corner of the end zone, it showed a lot of anticipation. He threw it before he came out of his break, and it was precise. And those are some of the things that you see to tell that he's a much more confident and comfortable quarterback.
TD is with us, and a lot of the reports that I've read since, you know, mandatory minicamp and OTAs have fallen on our show, we haven't been able to get out there and actually see for ourselves. But everything I've read, everything that I've seen, everything that I've heard about Will Levis, that he does some good things, does some not so good things, but overall is that he looks like a first-year player. When do you think it is fair to make our evaluations about Will Levis in comparison to Malik Willis and who should be quarterback two moving forward?
Yeah, I think that's an ongoing evaluation. I don't think there's any certain point where it's an end-all, be-all over the next, you know, couple months or so, at least through training camp and the preseason. That's going to be a good opportunity. And fortunately for both of these guys, Ryan Tannehill typically doesn't take snaps in the preseason. So that should give them like a half each, you know. So that's a good opportunity for them in those games. So I would say probably week two preseason, that should be when you can start to tell one separate from the other.
Curious about what you just said, and that is, you know, you assess after each preseason game, especially two young quarterbacks like Willis, and also, you know, the Will Levis coming in and Malik Willis, plus you have Tannehill. So how do you anticipate with a new offensive coordinator, they divide up the reps? We used to complain so much about, oh my gosh, we got to have four preseason games. Now, hey, we got three preseason games, but in a way, I'd almost like to have four when you have this situation so you could get more guys, more reps. But now they've got to make some decisions there.
Yeah, it gives you more time to evaluate them. But I think, you know, the fact that they have two, you know, joint practices, 2 weeks of that, that's going to help also in the evaluation process. And that'll help Ryan Tannehill. He'll get his live reps, well, semi-live reps there. You know, you're seeing a different defense and things are different. You know, you don't know everything the defense is going to do having not faced them for 3 weeks straight like you did against, your team. So I think that's going to be good for Tannehill. He'll get most of the first team reps, but I wouldn't be surprised if Will Levis and Malik Willis get some of those as well, and they just continue rotating.
Teron, do you think that it will be a sign that they really believe that Willis could be an NFL quarterback someday if they decide to keep three quarterbacks? I'm really curious about that, because Malik Willis can't control if they pick Will Levis in the draft, but he can control how much better he gets between year one and year two, and this could be a good problem for the Titans if he can crowd up the future here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a good problem, because that means that two guys that you invested high draft picks in are proving themselves to be worthy of a roster spot and possibly an opportunity to contribute either in the near future or long term. So it's a good thing. I do think they keep three quarterbacks, especially, you know, with this rule coming into play. Having a third active quarterback on the roster, that insurance policy to me would be more important than, you know, a gunner on punt team, a receiver that could do that, a corner or a safety that could do that. So I think that's where the whole precedence. But this team is probably going to keep three, or at least three, probably four tight ends. How deep are they going to go receiver wise? How deep are they going to go cornerback wise, safety wise? So there's a lot to look at there. And I think guys like Elijah Molden, who could fill the nickel spot as well as a safety spot, that could help someone like a Malik Willis get a roster spot, because it's buy one, get two free with Molden. So now you could have a specific guy like Willis who would be a QB3 in that case.
Tron Davenport is with us. TD, looking at this article on ESPN.com, the Titans have the 29th ranked offense in the NFL, ahead of only the Texans and the Panthers with two rookie quarterbacks, and the Arizona Cardinals, who are tanking this season. Looking at that from a point of view of DeAndre Hopkins, how much better in terms of, perception and actual offensive firepower does DeAndre Hopkins make this Titans offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it gives a safety net when it's third and 10. You could go back shoulder to him and he'll get that first down for you. And there's also the confidence that he brings not only to the receiver room and to the offense, but to the whole team. And that's something I think can't go overlooked. So it does improve them drastically, just because you're having a guy who, is proven to be one of the best receivers in the game. And you look at when he had that stretch, when he was on the field last year, he was among the best, over that 7-game stretch. So he still has a lot to him, and I think he would definitely elevate the offense.
And I was listening to you and Jared on the TD Power Hour on Thursday, and I heard you say, hey, it gets to a certain point where the Titans need to be more aggressive in their pursuit of DeAndre Hopkins. I understand, the idea of here's our offer and we're sticking to it. But as time goes on and the need still exists for more offensive firepower, I'm with you, TD. I do think that the Titans should be a little bit more aggressive. Just from your perspective, why do you think they should be more aggressive, and just how much more aggressive can they be?
See, that's the thing. I don't know what their offer is to him. If it's an offer that he asked for and it's just still sitting on the table, I don't go back and make it a sweeter. I gave you asked for this. This is what we offered, and we should have had a deal. So, you just got to be careful with the more aggressive part, because we don't know what has been on the table. Now, if the offer is under what he wants, yeah, I think if you determine that he is the difference maker for you, you go get him. You get aggressive at that point.
Let me throw one more in on Willis, TD, because you mentioned at the end of your piece, Willis will work with his trainer, Quincy Avery, between now, the end of OTAs, and the beginning of training camp. It's a really interesting time period that we're talking here. Can you tell us and the listeners who is Quincy Avery, and what is, how does he work in concert with what the Titans are doing, and how valuable could this time be?
Yeah, it's really interesting, because Levis and Willis have two of the best QB trainers, and there's a local one here that's really good too. I don't know his name off the top, but it's QB Country. He's local to here in Nashville. But there's so many really good trainers, and you look at Jordan Palmer, who's working with Will Levis, and then Quincy Avery, who's working with Willis. Avery has worked with Deshaun Watson, Jordan Love, Jalen Hurts, a bunch of quarterbacks. So I think, when you look at some of the guys that Willis will be able to work with, that's good, just to, share knowledge and things. But their main thing is going to be to work on his footwork and marrying his eyes to his footwork. And so that way, when he determines where he needs to go with the football, his footwork will be in conjunction with his mind. So that's kind of the things that they're going to work with. Quincy Avery does a lot of quirky or unique type of drills. One of the ones that he has done before is one of the ones that you saw Charles London and Pat O'Hara putting the quarterbacks through in OTAs, where they would do the cone drill. They weave through the cones, and then they had to flip their hips and turn around and throw the ball in the little targets in the nets there. That's something that Avery does. So there's a lot of good things that he'll be able to pick up and just continue to work with. But it's a mechanics thing that he's going to focus on.
Last one for you, TD. I was looking at Monday Morning Quarterback, and Connor Orr, you know, this time of year puts out the most underrated players on each team in the AFC and NFC. And for the Tennessee Titans, Connor Orr slated Chick Okonkwo as the most underrated player for the Tennessee Titans. Do you agree? And what does Chig need to do this season, in your opinion?
Yeah, actually, I fully agree with that because it's funny. I did ESPN Radio over the weekend, two shots. And when we were on, was it primetime yesterday, I was asked who is a player in the NFL that no one is talking about that they need to. And naturally, my brain went right to Chig Okonkwo. And I think when you look at Chig, all he has to do is just be more consistent, be able to get on the field more than the 37% snaps that he had last year. That's not all due to him. That was just the way the reps were distributed. But when he's out there, continue to maximize it, because this is a guy that Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Darren Waller, you name all those guys, none of them had more 40-yard receptions than Chigozie and Okonkwo. So I think that lets you know what he's capable of, and it's just a matter of just being a consistent player and maximizing every opportunity that he gets.
TD, appreciate you as always. Thanks for hanging out with us. We're looking forward to our chat next Monday.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you. Take care.
Just how much more improved does Malik Willis look now than last season?
Yeah, I think he's a lot different as a player. And you could tell just how he's in and out of the huddle. It's very smooth. He's going up to the line of scrimmage. And you can see him scan the defense and can it and check to a different play and those type of things. He's throwing with more anticipation, which is definitely something that, you know, that's how I started that article. You know, that throw that he had to Mason Kinsey in the corner of the end zone, it showed a lot of anticipation. He threw it before he came out of his break, and it was precise. And those are some of the things that you see to tell that he's a much more confident and comfortable quarterback.
That was TD, who just joined us in the last segment. Hey, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. It's brought to you by the News and Sportsbook. With cash rewards and the easiest, simplest betting experience possible, betting just got better. Download the Zen Sportsbook app today. TD put out an article on ESPN.com and highlighted just how much he thinks Malik Willis has improved. And it's not TD's opinion. I mean, take it from Malik Willis himself. TD wrote in his article, a direct quote from Malik Willis, "It is definitely different from last year. I think when you have a whole year of doing something, you just get a little bit more comfortable doing it." Chig Okonkwo also reiterated that kind of sentiment, that it's not just how Malik Willis feels. I mean, the rest of the team is noticing it. Chig Okonkwo said he seems a lot more confident in the huddle. When he's calling the plays and with his reads, he's a lot more decisive with the ball. And that's probably to be expected. You know, you've got a year under your belt. You feel more comfortable. You're getting a better grasp of the offense. You have a better understanding of what's expected of you. So those kind of, you know, confidence kind of things are coming to fruition for Malik Willis. And even Ryan Tannehill mentioned it's more on-the-field stuff as well. Ryan Tannehill said that he's more in command of the offense. He's throwing the ball accurately. He's playing fast. He can better read defenses now than he was able to at this point now than he was last season. But D-Mace and I made a rule for the program last week, Willie, when you were out on Friday. So I want to get your thoughts on what D-Mace and I have decided for the program. And since D-Mace is not here, you can talk trash on him all you want. But D-Mace and I decided, after reading this article from TD and now just hearing from TD, we have decided that we are not going to make any decisive evaluations about the quarterback conundrum that the Titans are facing until the preseason. That we are going to wait, we're going to let it play out, we're going to let Will Levis have the entirety of his first preseason, we're going to let him make the rookie mistakes, let him go through a training camp, and we can really evaluate it side by side, Willis and Levis in preseason games, before we make our definitive decision of who we think should back up Ryan Tannehill, who we think should be quarterback too. Do you agree with the decision that D-Mace and I made for the program?
Make it unanimous. I am all music to my ears. Music to my ears. I love it. But let's address Teron's article, because I think that's got some really good nuggets in here. Because number one, when I see guys like Tannehill, Okonkwo, I hear this from the coaching staff as well. Look, they want to see Malik Willis do well. That tells me they like what they see from him as a person, as a guy that's trying to be a pro. He's trying to get there. I think there are situations, right? Struggles in the first year, and they don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. They don't see a guy that's really doing the right things to get better. And you can sense that there it's kind of just a matter of time before they move on. I don't sense that with Willis. I really do think, despite the crowded house, despite having Tannehill and having Will Levis, I still think they want to give him an opportunity to get better. They drafted him in the third round last year, and I think on that day, at least go and this is this good ties back into Caroline, the new rule that you've made, because the rule I thought all along last year, I was thinking during training camp, this is great. Maybe he could be the backup next year. The thought of him being the backup last year to me was a rush, and that's what they did, and they thrust him in there. I think we'd be a lot more optimistic about Malik Willis if he had never played last year, if they'd used Logan Woodside or somebody else as the backup quarterback last year and let him sort of sit and learn and continue to develop. But they are where they are. He knows what he has to get better at. He's got a long way to go. Some of these things are really nice. I like it. And like I said, they want him to get better. But man, I still think I got to see it more. And I think Derek, you and Derek are right. Let's just see what he looks like. Does he look like a different guy in the controlled scrimmages and then the preseason games? And what you have to hope for is that in another year, you've got a situation where you could go maybe like the perfect storm would be Levis shows you that he's got first round talent and he's ready to go. And then Malik Willis is a guy pushing him and is the guy that you say, now that's a guy that we could be a backup quarterback for several years. And maybe who knows? There's a quarterback competition. All of these things would be good things. You never can have enough guys. You want to develop players. So I agree. We're not going to find out anymore for a while. Our next clue will be during training camp. But at least there's some encouraging signs that the vibe from the people around Malik Willis is that he's worth keeping an eye on, that he's worth giving the reps to, that he has a chance if he can work some of these things out, that he could be a productive player, even if it's just a backup. If you develop a good backup, that's a plus. That means you don't have to go looking around for an expensive backup.
And that's, I think, what the key here is the basis and the overall takeaway that I get from TD's article is, hey, at this point, there's reason to be optimistic. More reasons to be optimistic about Malik Willis than really we have seen since he got to Nashville. That's all it is. And our new rule for the program doesn't mean that we can't have opinions about what we will see in camp from both Willis and Levis. Doesn't mean that either one of them can't have a good or bad day, and doesn't mean that we can't react to it. But when it comes down to who is Ryan Tannehill's backup, who is QB2, I don't think it's fair to make those assessments until we can see it in pads, in a game setting, with those two side by side, executing the offense, doing it with players around them that they would likely have in a regular season setting. Because, like you mentioned, Willie, too, right now they're in shorts. Right now, there is no pass rush. Right now, it is a very calm and, not intense environment. Right now, it's just let's get these guys back into the swing of things. Let's start to, get the activation of the new offense in here. And then we'll put on the pads. And then we'll start going full speed. At that point, when the pads are on and they're going full speed, it could be a completely different evaluation. But right now, reason to be optimistic about Malik Willis. Right now, Will Levis looks like a rookie. And that's okay. Because he is one, and he is not your starting quarterback.
This is why I always bring up development. Derek, I know, harps on this as well. Developing the quarterback specifically is such a difficult thing when you don't have the minor leagues like you do in baseball or hockey, where you can put a guy on there. He's often in a smaller town, smaller market, playing every day, making mistakes. It's okay. Make the mistakes. Our minor league team loses? Not a big deal. Not a big deal at all. You just don't have that in football. You have to do this all scenes and not in game situations. It's so tough. And a lot of players just can't do it. They wish they maybe played a different sport where you could have that environment. But this has all got to be behind the scenes. You got to do it on your own. You've got your trainer and things like that. That intrigues me as well. But I think it's a tough thing to do, but what you have to hope is these guys are developing. It's not as important this year who is the backup. That's something to watch for sure. But ultimately, if Ryan Tannehill gets hurt like he did last year, the Titans' season is probably sunk, regardless of who they put in there. It's really a question of a year from now. What do you think you have in Levis and Willis the following year? That's really when you're probably going to be looking for a quarterback, and you're figuring out who. What do you have there? Do you have a one and two in there? Is there just one? Which one? These are all the questions. Malik Willis hopes that he's still in this equation.
Hey, coming up this Wednesday at 6 o'clock, it is draft night in Smashville with Robbie Stanley, Willie Donick, Max Herz, and Chase McCabe live from Bridgestone Arena for the 2023 NHL Draft. NHL Draft coverage is brought to you by International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 429, Electronic Express, and Oil Fire Whiskey. Willie, I know that it is going to be some good coverage all across our airwaves all week long, and that on Wednesday night at 6 o'clock is no different. So we'll be sure to tune in for that on Wednesday at 6 o'clock. Coming up next, we will reset the news of the weekend. The Predators trade Ryan Johansson away to the Colorado Avalanche, eat up half of his remaining salary. What does that mean for this Predators team now? What does that mean for the building of the future for the Nashville Predators? We'll get into all of that and, of course, your thoughts coming up next as well. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
And how do you believe Ryan Johansson's tenure in Nashville should be remembered?
I think it has to be remembered that he was a part of the reason that they made it to the Stanley Cup final. And while I don't think they got what they completely wanted out of, that deal, when you give up an asset like Seth Jones, you have to give to get. They did. And, the reason you get a player who was, selected fourth overall, I believe, and it had a 30-goal season with Columbus, the reason they're available is because, there's a flaw there. And, we saw the flaw, and that just hasn't been a consistent player, for this team for one reason or another. There have been some very good stretches of very good hockey, and then there have been stretches of anonymous hockey. And for $8 million, you can't have anonymous hockey. You've got to have dominant play all the time. You got to have a guy you can depend on. And so, I won't say, it was certainly not a swing and a miss, but it was not a swing and a home run for the Preds. He was a part of a lot of playoff teams and a lot of victories. I think we can, nicely say that.
That was Corey Curtis, News 2, on with Robbie on Rex Road this morning. And I think it kind of sums up my feelings on the Ryan Johansson trade. Again, the big news of the weekend, the Predators trade Ryan Johansson to the Colorado Avalanche. The Predators will absorb half of Ryan Johansson's remaining salary, so $4 million this year, $4 million next year. The Predators, in return, get the youngster Alex Galchenyuk. But as Barry Trotz told John Glennon of the Nashville Post, doesn't really intend on signing Alex Galchenyuk. It was simply a salary dump move. They move on from the $8 million contract of Ryan Johansson, and I think that it is a positive thing for the Nashville Predators. But he will be remembered as a guy who was an integral part of that core that got this team to the 2017 Cup, that got that team a 2018 President's Trophy. He'll be remembered as doing good things for the Nashville Predators. But as Corey Curtis alluded to there, it wasn't consistent enough. It got stale.
I think Corey's take was pretty good. I look at the years 2015-16. That's the second year of Peter Laviolette. That's the year that Ryan Johansson became a Predator. Now remember, he was not on that big contract yet. But from 2015-16 through 2018-19, those 4 years, you had a playoff victory in the first round in Anaheim in 2016. You had the great run of 2017 going all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Ryan Johansson was a big part of that, and had he not gotten hurt in that freak injury that really put his health in danger. Remember, it was a very surprising thing. It didn't look like it happened. And suddenly, he's having this major swelling. He's got to have emergency surgery, and you didn't know what was going to happen. Had that not happened, maybe they would have had enough to beat the Penguins in the final. We'll never know. But he was playing lights out during that playoffs run. He was outstanding. Comes back the next year, has a good year, had 14 points in 13 playoff games, President's Trophy, Central Division winner, lost to a very, very powerful Jets team in Game 7. That's the what if. That's right. A bummer, whatever.
What could have been?
The next year, 2018-19, another good year, 64 points and a solid year, a division title. Those 4 years, I would argue, are the best 4 years in franchise history. And those are four really productive years. But you can't say that the trade of Ryan Johansson for Seth Jones wasn't successful. Was it a grand out-of-the-park home run? He never turned into the superstar that maybe they hoped that he would be. And then, of course, the separate discussion is, and I don't remember exactly what year it was, if it was after the 18 season or after the 17 season, maybe Nick can help me on that, when he signed the eight times eight. You know, obviously, from that point on, if you look at the last 4 years of his career, he's really only had one good year out of those four, and that's just not something a team in this day and age of the salary cap can be successful with very often. Having a guy making $8 million with that type of investment and getting that return on the investment. So he may bounce back and be a really good pickup for the Avalanche at $4 million a year, but it just probably wasn't going to happen the next 2 years for the Predators. So it was just time to get off the ride. And look, as a person, I'm rooting for Ryan Johansson. He's a good, good guy, and he's got a lot of talents. And it's going to be tough to watch him in the Avalanche because he's in the division, right? He could be really motivated and bounce back, and he could be a solid player for them. But but it just wasn't going to happen here, I don't think. And there were too many other guys at his position that they really wanted to give more opportunities to. Parsonen, Novak, Glass, to name three.
Now, the contract that you were referencing, yes, was signed in 2017, it looks like. It was on July 28th, so that was a good deal for him.
2017.
Yeah.
After the cup run.
Yep. So, and then also, too, Willie, I don't know why I'm thinking this way, and maybe we'll have a stark difference in opinion here, but it kind of feels like the PK Subban trade when he left Nashville. What do you think?
Well, the difference is that the Predators were able to trade the entirety of PK Subban's contract, right? So in retrospect, that turned out to be very good. Now, you can sit there and say, well, they didn't get anything for PK Subban. No, they didn't. But they traded him right as his sharp decline was about to happen. And they got three excellent years. You could say probably the three best years of the franchise history out of PK Subban, and then rid themselves of his contract and were able to use that money. And essentially they took that money and signed Matt Duchene. So that you could make that argument too. So this one, they're sort of giving Ryan Johansson away for half price. So there's a cost in trading him. They didn't get anything for him because they're not going to sign Alex Galchenyuk, but they opened up a little more flexibility on their roster, and also more flexibility in the salary cap, where they gain $4 million this year and they gain $4 million next year.
And I think that, I don't want to say very rarely, but you see several instances in sports, period, not just hockey, but in sports, where trades kind of seem a little lopsided, where you look at it and you're like, well, why would you make that move? Or that seems like a really ridiculous return. Maybe one way or another, like you paid too much, you didn't pay enough, you didn't get enough in return. But really looking at the intentions and the needs of both of these teams, the Predators and the Avalanche, it seems like both teams kind of got out what they needed from it. I read some articles from people who cover the Avalanche, people in Denver, talking about like kind of their perspective of the trade, because as Nashville people who cover the Nashville Predators and as Nashville Predators fans, we look at it like, hey, the Preds needed to dump salary. They were overpaying a guy that they weren't getting enough production from. Great. You know, you cut ties, you move forward, or you create cap space, and you create space for this young core. from the Colorado Avalanche perspective of things, they've been looking for a second line center. Maybe Ryan Johansson ends up being that for the Avs. Maybe he doesn't. But for $4 million, it's worth a shot. So I think from the Avalanche perspective, they look at it like, hey, okay, you got a pretty solid player who maybe his best days are behind him, but getting him for $4 million and you have a spot open on that second line, Ryan Johansson can fit in there. So it does seem like, even though it's not the sexiest trade in the world, even though it's not a marquee trade that everybody on NHL Network and SportsCenter are talking about, each side got what they needed out of it.
And it'll be spicy because these are two rivals in the division. Right. I'll be totally honest with you. I was surprised that the Avalanche would be interested. I thought for the Predators to make a change and move on from Ryan Johansson, they were probably going to be more likely to have to buy him out. And so I was surprised there was a taker, even at half price. I'll be surprised if he is what the Avalanche hope he will be. But look, like I said, I'm rooting for Ryan Johansson. I like him as a person. It will sting me a little bit if he's doing really well for the Avalanche against the Predators, especially. Yeah. But that is a really intriguing move by Colorado and Joe Sakic. That's an organization that obviously knows what they're doing. They think he's a fit. We'll see if Johansson can get fit. I mean, he's coming off of a pretty significant injury, right? I know he's feeling pretty good right now. But can he get into the kind of shape he needs to get in? You heard what Barry Trotz said. He's got to be quicker than he's been the last couple of years to be effective. And that's a team that doesn't play slow, the Avalanche. But he's got guys who he can distribute the puck to. And Ryan Johansson's got hands. He's a great passer. So he's passed pretty lethal weapons in Colorado. So he's going to have an opportunity.
Yeah, Willie, part of me thinks he's going to be dishing Mikko Rantanen for quite a few goals this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's playing with those guys. The numbers will be there. There's no question about it, right? Because he knows how to pass. He's got vision. He's got skills. He wins faceoffs. And so, you know, that's going to lend itself to, if they stay healthy and are still the team that the last couple years, he should have good numbers there.
And it is kind of interesting to think. I wonder from the Predators fan perspective, because I don't think it's up for debate that Ryan Johansson now with the Colorado Avalanche is in a better position to win a Stanley Cup than the Nashville Predators are. So let's say that happens this year. The Avs win the Cup. Are Predators fans going to be happy for Ryan Johansson, or is it going to be kind of a sting? I think that Preds fans would be happy for him, just considering where the franchise is at this point. You know, if this happened maybe last year, would Preds fans feel a little bit more salty about it? Just, you know, if the Preds continued on a level of status quo. But I don't know. I think it's an interesting philosophy. I like to think that Preds fans would be happy for him.
It's a really interesting question. We'll find out when he comes in and plays against Nashville. But I think he's a guy that makes you smile. He's a likable guy, right? Even when he struggled, there wasn't a lot of booing, hey, you're a bum kind of stuff. Because deep down, everybody loves Joey, right? He's a personable guy. He's vibing with Robbie Stanley, right? He loves his dogs. He's in Nashville. He's on the scene. He's a popular player. And when he struggled, I don't think he was the kind of player that the crowd turned on. So you're asking a really good question. If he comes in and has three assists and the Avalanche blow the Predators out of the water, it'll probably spit, though, right?
I mean, of course.
That's the dilemma.
Any loss is going to sting. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. And, hey, be caller 3 right now to that phone number to win a pair of tickets to see Tears for Fears at First Bank Amphitheater on July 11th. That is caller 3. Good luck with that. NHL awards are tonight. Plus, we have a text in the text line that I want to get Willie's thoughts on. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Breaking on the Predators trade of Ryan Johansson over the weekend. Ryan Johansson headed to the Colorado Avalanche. The Predators will absorb half of his remaining salary, $4 million over the next two seasons, in what was really essentially a salary dump for the Nashville Predators. There was one text in the text line that I wanted to get Willie and Nick's thoughts on. David Texan, our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says we made too many long-term contracts. Should give only four-year deals. Same thing is going to happen with Forsberg. Just you wait and see. And I get it. I'm also a person that is very leery of long-term contracts because you inevitably, let's say you sign that eight-year deal at 28 years old, you're not going to be the same player at 28 that you are at 35 and 36 years old. But do GMs really have a choice? For like an elite player like that, would a player like that sign anything less than an eight-year deal?
Go for it, Willie.
I think it's unlikely that they would. Most of those players, they're that good. They have enough leverage to demand the eight-year deal because it's the most guaranteed money that they can get. The rare exception might be, and this is one to look for, because look, the texter has a great point, right? GMs don't want to have themselves in this situation, but it's the only way. And we'll, let's use Ryan Johansson. In 2017, Johansson was young, number one center who had tremendous playoffs. He played like a number one center, not the best in the league, but a guy that was going to go out on the free market and he was going to get that money from somebody, 8 times 8. Now, you could sit there and go, hey, they shouldn't have done it. But then what do? You come back the next year off of a Western Conference championship without Ryan Johansson. What was the alternative?
Right.
They would have had to, you know, they could not have replaced that. That was the market. That's what it costs to have those guys. So I see the point. And if you could get around it, you might. But that is the going rate for the premier players that have that leveraging power. What kills you is if you make the wrong call on the wrong guy and you overpay for somebody like that. Now let's look at Austin Matthews. This is one that right now you hear Elliott and some of the other guys, Pierre LeBrun, kicking around what's happening in Toronto. He's going into the last year of his contract. I think the Maple Leafs would love to sign him for 8 years, right? He's a superstar, 50-goal scorer.
Right.
But Austin Matthews is sitting there going, well, maybe I could get two kicks at the can here. Maybe I'll sign for 4 years and then be a free agent again.
And bump my salary up even more in 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's the thing with him. But, you know, the reality is this is the way that the system is set up and the best players are going to go for those max contracts for 8 years. And you just got to live with it. And you got to realize, look, it's either that or you don't have that guy.
Well, and I think there's definitely some merit into all of that. And I think just the players having leverage is what kind of it just this is just how it works. Like, I've always seen deals like that come across in the NHL with all these big fish. You know, a guy that we're waiting to see what the details are on this trade, Taylor Hall's going to the Chicago Blackhawks. Well, he has signed long deals before. So when you see guys sign all these big deals and they're all valuable and everything, like, you do realize, everyone does, this is a gamble somewhat. Like, you have to walk into signing any guy long term and go, okay, well, if we're signing him for 8 years like we just did a Johansson, or maybe it's a Duchesne at some point, or Forsberg for even at that, if you sign guys to that long of a deal, for me, it's always a gamble. I don't care how good you are. It's a gamble for Matthews. It's a gamble for McDavid at times. Now, every case is different in their own way because of what they provide. But at the same point in case with the texture, it's, yeah, the Preds, they've given some long-term deals to some guys that don't live up to eight-year talent. So that is a problem. And I don't think we saw that very early on within the Predators' history. So it's good to see that they are trying to commit to some of these big contracts, but they've clearly been able to keep them, and then those players essentially showcase why they were worth that. So that was the problem for me, because remember too, and I have pointed this out a few different times, when the Predators acquired Ryan Johansson from the Columbus Blue Jackets, Poyle said time and time again, you know, we've never had a true number one center. Joey is that for us. We hope that he can be that for us for a very long time. He was up until about, I would say, 2-3 seasons ago, where it started to drop off for him. So it's always a gamble. But if you ask me, the Yossis and the Forsbergs, the guys that we know will make a difference, that's what's bigger for me, signing those guys more long-term. Because I always thought it was a little iffy on Johansson, to be frank. I just always thought it kind of was. Centerman.
But he just, it was the market. He had the market. He had the leverage to get that contract. So it was either that or you don't have him. And like we've been saying all show long, it's hard to find number one centers. He may not have been the best number one center, but he was a legit number one center for a good portion of his time with the Predators. There was a drop-off there. Forsberg, is the caller is right to bring up the last few years of Forsberg. Hey, look, what is Forsberg? He just, year one wasn't all that great, right? He had a concussion. He didn't play great. The team didn't do great. So it's a big investment. Let's see what happens. You hope that he's that type of player that over the course of the contract, he gives you good return. But let's throw this in there, too, to tie it into another big theme of our discussion today. Gets traded to the Blackhawks. Now I've switched sports altogether.
Chicago.
But Taylor Hall
He's
goes
in Chicago.
To the Blackhawks. Chicago. I had the right city. I had the wrong sport. I had the wrong nickname. But Taylor Hall was on the Bruins, a team that was way up against the salary cap. They had to release some pressure from that. So you're thinking, Taylor Hall, here's a guy that was the MVP of the league not too long ago, making $6 million a year the next 2 years. The Bruins just could not afford to keep him because David Pastrnak is now on one of these monster contracts at $11.25 million. So somebody had to go. I will bet you that the Blackhawks now just got a guy that they can put with Connor Bedard, who's a pretty talented player, not the greatest, but he's going to do pretty well with Bedard, I would think. And I'll bet you they didn't have to give up very much to get him.
And that is the world that we live in of a hard, hard salary cap. Sometimes you got to give up elite players for a bag of pucks because you're saving all your other elite players and you're paying all of your other elite players. That is going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. The NHL Awards are tonight. Head out to Broadway. There is a bunch of fun going on around Bridgestone Arena. Brothers Osborne at 5:45 p.m. There's a bunch of concerts, so head out to Bridgestone Arena. I know it'll be a party on Broadway tonight. I'm hoping it will be a party in my house tonight as the LSU Tigers take on the Florida Gators for all the marbles tonight. I'm hoping to be in a very good mood tomorrow. Stillman & Company is up next.